This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. The Trump administration has dropped a 22,000-pound bomb on Afghanistan, saying that it was aimed at underground tunnels being used by Islamic State militants. News media reported that the so-called mother of all bombs killed 36 people, apparently none of them civilians. During his presidential campaign in November 2015, Trump made an aggressive declaration about bombing ISIS.
Now you're talking about sneaky, dirty, underhanded people that want to kill our civilians. They want to go after our civilians. They want to kill not only our civilians, all over the world. And it's going to be stopped. It's going to be stopped. Somebody criticized me the other day because they asked me what I do, and I said, I'm going to bomb the shit out of them. It's true. I don't care. I don't care. They've got to be stopped.
The bombing on Afghanistan came just days after the U.S. attacked Syrian government targets for the first time. But both Afghanistan and Syria are sites of active U.S. military engagements, with Afghanistan in particular still hosting 8,500 U.S. ground troops and earning the distinction of being the longest official war against another country that the U.S. has ever waged. Meanwhile, the U.S. has also continued its wars in Iraq and the Saudi-led war in Yemen. Now the Trump administration has East Asian leaders panicked after warning that it could launch a preemptive strike against North Korea if that regime continues its nuclear testing. Trump has talked out of both sides of his mouth, claiming to be both an isolationist and a war hawk. My guest is Midia Benjamin, co-founder of the human rights group Global Exchange, as well as the peace organization Code Pink. She's a longtime political activist who's also written a number of books, including Saudi Arabia, Kingdom of the Unjust, Drone Warfare, Killing by Remote Control, and others. Welcome to the program, Midia.
Thank you, Sonali. Nice to be on.
Thanks so much for joining us. So plenty to talk about. Let's talk about Afghanistan first. Now, there had been almost no warning, of course, that this was going to happen, that this giant bomb was going to be dropped on Afghanistan. It was the first time that this is the largest non-nuclear bomb to have ever been used by the U.S., and it was the first time that this particular bomb was used. But the Islamic State, which was the ostensible target of the United States, does not even have a very strong presence in Afghanistan. We've been fighting the Taliban and or maybe remnants of Al-Qaeda. How do you explain what the U.S. did?
Well, who knows? I mean, there seems to be a real propensity of this Trump administration to carry a big stick and use it. And while they say that this was in preparation for months, obviously the Obama administration did not want to go ahead with this, and Trump did. So whether I think we have to put it in the context of the larger picture of what happened recently in Syria, of Trump's response in Afghanistan, of the threats that he's making around North Korea, of stepped up U.S. involvement in Yemen, all of that to say that obviously this president did say something on the campaign trail that he seems to be complying with, in that he wants to bomb the you-know-what out of ISIS and whoever else he feels like.
Now, in Syria, where the U.S. had its declared enemy as ISIS, added a new enemy, and that's the Bashar al-Assad regime. But the Trump administration has not gotten permission from Congress to suddenly add a new enemy to the list. Presumably, he's still working from the 9/11 era military authorization that Congress made, which, of course, you could argue probably doesn't even apply to ISIS, but you might be able to make a sort of long shot argument. Assad is completely out of the picture when it comes to what happened on September 11th.
Well, yes, and that's why you do hear some members of Congress who are saying you have to come to us. But then on the other hand, what happens when a president comes to Congress, with the exception of the 2013 when the U.S. people rose up to say we did not want to get involved with overthrowing Assad, it seems like the sentiment today would be very much in favor of Trump. So I worry when the progressive movement says let's push Trump to go to Congress, I would say let's push Congress to say no to further U.S. intervention. And of course, this does not mean, as some people have interpreted it, that folks are supporting Assad. It means that we don't, that we know history, that we look at the involvement of U.S. in the region, and we know the U.S. further involvement will only make things worse for people on the ground.
Now, Afghanistan has the currently largest sort of footprint. We have the largest footprint on the ground in Afghanistan of any country, including Iraq or Syria and any other country, about 8,500 troops there. President Obama did not wrap up that war as he meant to. There was a surge of troops that he justified near the beginning of his tenure. That didn't work. Now, General John Nicholson of the U.S. military, who is in Afghanistan, has asked for another surge. And apparently, he has gotten some kind of escalation, if not more ground troops. From your perspective, what is it going to take for the U.S. to get out of the longest official war it has ever waged? We're going on 16 years in Afghanistan.
Sonali, if I knew the answer to that, I would have done it. I mean, we've been trying so hard during these last 16 years, and you at the front of this, to say that U.S. involvement was not the answer. But it's been so difficult under the Bush years. It was the good war. Even when Obama came in, it was, quote, the good war. 16 years and still a good war? I don't think so. But unfortunately, Afghanistan, until the recent release of this, quote, mother of all bombs, has been off the radar. I would think that the majority of people don't even know that there are still 8,500 troops there. And yes, this request for more troops is very worrisome, because I think that Trump will okay that request. And where do we go from there? So I think it's part of a larger picture that we have to put the anti-war issues together with all these other resistance movements. And the only thing that gives me some positive indication that that might happen is the $54 billion budget that people are now seeing is taking money directly from programs that we care, that they care about. So perhaps, you know, this is the opening we need to get other folks in the United States to care about in the increased intervention under Trump.
Trump actually wouldn't admit whether he authorized the dropping of this gigantic bomb, the GBU-43/B, or MOAB, the mother of all bombs. Apparently, according to CNN, General John Nicholson signed off on the dropping of this bomb. Who is in charge? And I'm wondering if what has happened, what has played out with respect to the dropping of this bomb, indicates that the Pentagon feels like it might be unleashed now that Obama's out of office and they have a president who doesn't really know what he's doing, but is quite happy to sign off on more aggression.
Well, that's right. And I think we can don't really have to speculate about whether Trump signed off on this or not. We know that he's very happy about it. He said it was a very, very successful mission.
He probably he probably signed off on it in the middle of eating a cupcake or something.
Yes,
right?
yes. Or maybe this was breakfast instead of dessert. But he's happy about it. And he is opening the door for the Pentagon to take more leeway. We see that there has been a lot more drone strikes being used in Yemen. We see that there have been more troops sent to Kuwait. We see several different indications that the military is getting more aggressive, and Donald Trump is certainly not trying to stop that.
Let's talk about Yemen, which I know your organization Code Pink has been doing a lot of work on, and it's one that doesn't get very much attention at all in the United States, whether from anti-war activists or even from the media. Yemen is the poorest country in the Gulf, and its children in particular are extremely vulnerable to mass starvation right now. And it's Saudi Arabia that has its own direct interests there. What role is the U.S. playing, and why, in Yemen?
So there are two separate wars going on. There is the U.S. fighting al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, which is based in Yemen. And then the large war going on is the one between the Houthis, who have been supported by Iran to some extent, not nearly the extent that the media in the U.S. Says. And there is the president who was deposed or kicked out by the Houthis, and he fled to Saudi Arabia and asked for support there. And the Saudis, for the last 2 years, have been involved in a relentless bombing campaign. The U.S. is directly involved in this one because it's not only U.S. planes, U.S. bombs, U.S. weapons, but it's U.S. maintenance of all of these. It's U.S. logistical support. It's U.S. refueling of these planes in the air. It's U.S. That has been providing diplomatic cover as well. So the U.S. is directly involved. The Saudis could not be carrying out this horrific bombing campaign were it not for U.S. military support.
Now, the situation in Yemen, the humanitarian situation in particular, is so dire. I just sort of imagine if this had been happening in any other country that the U.S. Wasn't so directly involved in, and maybe if its victims were lighter skinned, would we be seeing more coverage? Why is there such a media blackout on Yemen?
I think there's a media blackout because it is, as you say, a very poor country, a Muslim country, and a country that the a war where the U.S. has been supporting the Saudis, and the media, amazingly enough, does so little to question U.S. alliance with Saudi Arabia. It just blows my mind, having recently written a book on Saudi Arabia and done so much research on it, how much the media accepts the idea that Saudi Arabia is one of the only, quote, stable countries in the Middle East, and how the U.S. should continue its alliance with that extremely repressive country. So for several reasons, the U.S. media barely even covers Yemen, but the situation is catastrophic. It is with one Yemeni baby dying every 10 minutes from the combined effects of war and hunger. And they're very much related because the Saudi bombings have wiped out about half of the medical facilities, made it difficult for humanitarian organizations to even bring aid in through the port, and the destruction of so much of the civilian infrastructure. So it is a catastrophic situation. The UN has called for billions of dollars in urgent aid. The US has given very little to that fund and instead prefers to spend our tax dollar money on support for the Saudi bombing.
Let's talk about the escalation in East Asia. This is more of a war of words so far, but it's very worrying. We'd actually been covering U.S.-China relations, U.S.-North Korea relations, but just in the last day or so, we're now hearing from the Trump administration that it is considering or could consider or might be willing to launch a preemptive strike against North Korea if it were to continue its nuclear missile testing. China, of course, is extremely worried about this. This kind of escalation is something we didn't see under Obama. We saw a little bit under Bush when he called North Korea, when he placed it on a so-called axis of evil, but it seemed more rhetorical than anything else. Is this more bluster, you think? Trump kind of playing these mind games that he thinks will work in a, you know, transfer from a business setting to a foreign policy setting? Or should we be taking this extremely seriously?
I think we should take it extremely seriously because he is such an erratic person. And now I'm not talking about the North Korean leader. I'm talking about our leader. And he said that his idea for foreign policy was unpredictability. And given how dangerous the situation could be between the U.S. and North Korea, I think we should be extremely worried. The Trump administration has not only made threatening remarks like, oh, if the Chinese can't take good care of this, we'll do it ourselves. But he has also sent a Navy strike group into the region, threatening the North Koreans with the presence of a U.S. warship. He has carried out all kinds of war games with the South Koreans on the North Korean border. And this is so provocative. We have a weekend coming up that marks the anniversary of the birth of the founder of North Korea. There is a lot of concern that this will be a time when the North Koreans set off their seventh nuclear test. Indeed, if they do, how will Trump react? It's very scary.
Can you make sense of Trump's foreign policy? As I said earlier, he is someone who cast himself during his campaign as an isolationist when he criticized Hillary Clinton's Secretary of State work and the Obama administration of being mired in many wars. Yet he has escalated wars and has shown an eagerness to be aggressive. But you can't have it both ways, can you? Can you be an isolationist and a war hawk at the same time?
I think in the short time that he's been in office, Sonali, he has proven that he's not an isolationist. He's proven that he has not learned the lessons of the last 16 years. And he's proven that he is heartless. I'm not an isolationist. I want the U.S. to be engaged internationally. I just don't want us to be engaged with using bombs and military reactions. I want the U.S. to be engaged in helping the humanitarian crisis, whether it's the Syrian refugee crisis or whether it's the 20 million people now facing starvation in countries from Nigeria to Yemen. The U.S. should be engaged and should be helping out throughout the world. Donald Trump is giving us the exact opposite. And I want to go back to something I said earlier, Sonali, which is the $54 billion additional money to the military that he is putting forth in his new budget. We already had a military that was taking over 50% of our discretionary funds. We already had a military that's largest than the next eight militaries combined. Now that he is asking for a 10% increase in the military budget, I think it's finally time for the progressive movement to take note of this and to join up collectively to say we need to move the money away from the war machine, away from the military-industrial complex, and into not only human needs and the environment here at home, but for the addressing the crisis. The crises, plural, that we see overseas, whether it's the humanitarian crisis, the famines looming, or the climate crisis that affects the entire globe.
Finally, Medea, I can't resist asking you about the reemergence of George W. Bush, a president that you were one of the leading activists railing against his policies. A man who at one point was the least popular president in U.S. history. And now, because by contrast with Trump, some people somehow have forgotten what he was responsible for. He's giving interviews, talking not just about his art, but also about U.S. policy and making comments about how Trump shouldn't do away with U.S. foreign aid because it serves a purpose and it doesn't cost very much. What do you make of the sort of reemergence of George W. Bush and his attempt to vindicate himself in some areas successfully?
I think it's disgusting. I think it's just horrendous, Sonali, that nothing was done to make George Bush and his cohorts accountable for the worst thing a president could ever do, which is take your country to war on the basis of lies. I fault President Obama for telling us to look forward instead of looking back. Had we looked back, had we held anyone from the Bush administration accountable, maybe we wouldn't be in the situation we are today. And let's remember, when we look at not only Al-Qaeda, but ISIS and its various branches. Now we're talking about the branch in Afghanistan. This would not exist had it not been for George Bush and his invasion of Iraq. So he should not be seen by any measure as some elder statesman who is the rational guy. And now that we have Trump in office, so much of what we see happening around the world, and particularly in the Middle East, is the responsibility of the George Bush and his administration.
Medea, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Is codepink.org a good place for people to find out how they can get involved with the anti-war movement?
Yes, that would be wonderful. Thank you so much.
That's codepink.org, and we'll post a link to that from our website later today. My guest is Medea Benjamin, co-founder of Global Exchange, as well as Code Pink, longtime political activist. She's written a number of books, including Saudi Arabia, Kingdom of the Unjust, Drone Warfare, Killing by Remote Control, and more. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.